time of day, internet, and welcome to Voices from the Grid, season 4, stroke Zio, stroke whatever we're calling it, Seps season. We're back. It's me, Ben Taylor. And I'm partnered up with my partner in SAS, Sasha Kaplan. How you doing?
We are the snarky dynamic duo. That is true.
Yeah, and what a set of episodes to put the two of us on.
Oh my God, really though. Granted, it's an improvement from last time to a certain degree, but it's...
So today we're reviewing three episodes. Brother, Can You Spare an Arrowhead? Trust in Me, and It Came from Angel Grove.
Start with the fact that we're reviewing the end of a saga that Bet, Mike, and Brian were reviewing.
I was going to get to that, right?
Okay.
Because when we were divvying up the episodes for this season, I was like, I specifically want absolutely nothing to do with the Tommy Arrowhead saga, because it's A, it's more Tommy episodes.
Yep.
B, it's a weird form of cultural nonsense. Like, all of a sudden, Tommy's Native American.
And just fiction.
Yeah. All of a sudden, Tommy's Native American and has a brother that he cares about so deeply that...
Because he's adopted. They were adopted.
Yeah. And then there's a dude that is literally a ghost. But it is worth reviewing that pile of nonsense to get to the other two episodes in this little trifecta. One of which I have opinions on, the other one of which I really enjoyed. But we'll get to that. So, Brother, Can You Spare Me an Arrowhead? Is the conclusion of the four-part Arrowhead arc.
Which was not a multi-parter for some reason.
No, it's something that I quite enjoy when other shows do it, where they don't call it like part one, part two, part three, and it's just like a long-term story. It's much like when we had the like Kimberly's exit arc. It wasn't all just a different shade of pink, parts 1 through 10 or whatever.
I think I'm just sort of shocked at the lack of multi-parters this season compared to like all of the multi-parters we had previously.
Yeah, because season 3 was all multi-parters, right? Like,
yes.
But we've had three episodes before this, which I want to point out, I categorically refused to watch. So if any of my opinions are things that are answered in the other three parts of the arc, I don't care.
Okay. I tried watching it and I couldn't, because the whole arc is like Tommy starts having a nightmare vision things.
He goes on a vision quest. Yeah.
Well, no, this is before the actual vision quest. This is like, the arc starts with, like, I only watched the beginning of it, whereas, like, Tommy starts having these weird dreams, and they're prophetic, and then he meets this Native American gentleman who is the same actor who aided Tommy on a Zio quest, and then he, like, offers him a ride home because Tommy's a nice dude, and then they just sort of get to, like, a quarry, and the guy's like, okay, you can drop me off here, and then he just, like, you know, does the vanishing thing.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, no.
Yep.
But what is important is we had a new toy for kids to buy.
Yeah, we get we had the Defender Wheel before, because we debuted that when we did our previous recording session together. In this one, we have the new mega
wheel thing, right?
The new Zord, the standing Zord with the shooty arms that combines with the other Zord by getting a piggyback. Which we see the combining sequence twice in this episode, just in case we didn't understand how it worked.
Yeah.
But the episode starts with in the middle of a fight. Right. Let's be quite clear about that. We, for someone who hasn't watched the other three episodes, the episode, it comes in and.
And there's no like previously on Power Rangers kind of a thing.
No.
It's just like a fight.
Yeah.
And I was like,
and there's not even a cold open to the episode. Like the other four Rangers are in the Zeo Megazord and they're off fighting someone called Mace Face, I think. And then
that sounds right, but at this point you can make something up and it would still sound right because it's Power Rangers.
Tommy has given the arrowhead to the arrowhead is this mystical thing that had been given to him by some ancient elder, apparently. He's given that to Mondo because Mondo cares about it for some reason.
Well, they explain that later. But what's interesting in that moment is as he's fighting Mondo, Mondo basically double crosses him. And Tommy says the dumbest line I've ever heard said by a Power Ranger. He goes, I never should have trusted you. I'm like, in what universe do you ever trust the bad guys? How many times has a Ranger been kidnapped and Rita's given an ultimatum or Zed is given an ultimatum? And it's just like, you should know by now, the bad guy will always double cross you. Like you've been a Power Ranger for like three seasons before this. How do you not know this?
Yeah, it's like.
Like, are you new here?
Over the last like two seasons, Tommy has developed this habit of monologuing in case, like he did it in a previous two-parter where they needed to fill about 30 seconds where he starts going off about, oh my God, this could be the end of the Power Rangers, right? He did that in season three. And then here, after Mondo disappears, he monologues again and just punches the ground for some reason.
But like, so the funny thing is when I thought the episode like cut off, I thought the Rangers had been kidnapped or something because there's this line where like, I have to choose between the Rangers and my brother or something like that.
Yeah. So his brother has been kidnapped.
Right.
Right. So apparently Tommy is thinking he has to choose between the big fight about taking the new Zord to join the Rangers fighting Mace Face, or his brother, who is in a cave that Tommy literally cannot get into because of some kind of force field. And Tommy is thinking that's a moral choice. Not that, well, I literally can't do anything about one of them, so let's go take care of the other one. And I would like to point out that when he does go and join the Rangers, the fight takes about 1 minute. He shows up, the Zords combine, they shoot the dude, he's dead. So there was no choice to be made, right?
Right, and even Zordon at that point is like,
dude,
you know, you have to go and help the Rangers. And I'm like, does he actually have to go and help the Rangers? Blah, 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 blah. And it's like this really
would
ridiculous.
Would he not just like die? That would be great.
But it's like family versus Rangers. And I'm looking at this. I'm like, wow, we've literally never seen this before. This is a totally brand new plot line that has never, ever been done before. Like ever.
Yep. We get to see after that. We get to see what is one of my favorite things in Zeo. Two of my favorite things in Zeo. One, the relationship between Bulk and Skull and Rito and Goldar. Because I said it during season three, I love me some Rito Repulsa. But we get to hear a siren, which I was like, what's that?
And they're yep, like, oh, that's
Angel Grove's All Clear siren. Like an actual warning system to do with the monster attacks. Which I was like, that's really, I was wondering if they had something like that, right? Which, I don't know, I quite like
that. We do get sort of little hints about the We still don't understand the economy of Angel Grove, but we do get a little bit more information about how the society functions in relation to the Power Rangers, which is the Sirens. And I can't remember what episode it's in. Maybe it's in the next. No, it's not in the next one, but there's this whole thing with, like, maybe it wasn't even my episode, where, like, Lieutenant Stone is showing Balkan Skull the...
It's this one.
Okay, it is this one.
And he's putting them through, like, a Rorschach test.
Yeah, and then he's, like, at the end, it's like, oh, well, you guys are obsessed with monsters. And for any other town, this would be a problem. But since this is Angel Grove, the book says that we need you. And I'm like, huh.
Yeah, the book that's like, I'm nuts. You're nuts, I'm not.
Yeah, yep. Because that clearly looks like a trusted manual, like the DSM-5 or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oy.
So, going back to
the Arrowhead.
No, going back to David being held in the cave. There are a bunch of cave paintings in the cave. One of which comes alive.
Yep.
And becomes the monster for the episode, right? Called the Autochthon. And Billy says something like, oh, they're like the earliest known form of life on the planet. And he says it in a way like, duh. Like, everyone knows that. And I'm here to point out, no, they're not. That's not science, Billy. Blah, 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 blah. That's not how science works. And then Tanya's like, I thought these things were just a myth. And Zola's like, no, it's just been created by all the evil in the cave. And I'm like, isn't that the same?
You know, Power Rangers, like, if you look at the world in Power Rangers, first of all, like, just in 30 years of continuity, all of these bad guys trying to take over the Earth, you'd think they'd learn after, like, the mass invasion, after the other mass invasion, that, like, you don't mess with the Earth. But it fascinates me to no end how many pits of despair and you know, like, evil places there are on Earth that bad guys have been, like, mining or, like, developing or imbuing with evil over the centuries.
That we, with, like, satellite imagery, don't know about.
Well, because magic doesn't show up on satellite imagery. Duh, Ben.
Right. Yeah, okay. Yep.
That is how magic works.
That and the whole atmosphere on the moon thing.
There's a very simple explanation.
Yeah. So this Ichthon monster. So the Arrowhead apparently has the power to control monsters, because as is explained by Wise and the old Native American elder, long ago, a warrior, heavily implying it's something to do with Tommy, appeared and trapped all these evil spirits in the Arrowhead.
Yep. And then if you put the Arrowhead into the big stone, it will release all the bad guys.
Yeah. And it also has the power to control monsters.
Yes. Thank you.
So when the Autochthon shows up, Mondo's like, well, we should teleport that thing to fight the Rangers, and I'll control it with this Arrowhead, right? And in a move that is probably the smartest thing I've ever seen anyone do in Power Rangers, as the thing's being teleported away, Tommy's brother David just grabs the thing and teleports with it.
Yep.
It's a staggering level of brain for this episode. This episode does not have a lot of brain. You know what I mean? It's a pretty stupid episode.
I mean, to be perfectly honest, this entire arc was kind of stupid, just for the reasons that we've already outlined, that it's playing on these, like, I can't even call them Native American stereotypes because they're just fiction. I don't know, the, like, anyway.
And then,
but if you wanted to give Tommy an arc, like, maybe it would have been interesting if his brother was like, oh my God, we've reunited, come back to, you know, live with me on the reservation, help our community. And maybe Tommy struggles with that and realizes, and then, you know, you can do the thing where David gets kidnapped because Mondo does the thing that Rita does, which is spying on the Rangers at all times of the day, which is incredibly creepy. Like, you could have done something, I think, a little bit more in depth, but I'm just so confused by some of the plot elements we're seeing this season.
Could you imagine if this was a two season long arc, and this is what leads to Tommy leaving? Not just, we're passing the powers to other Rangers because...
I thought it was because he wanted to be a race car driver. But no, you're right. That would have been so much cooler than the whole race car driver thing. But we needed something for him to do in Turbo.
So there's this, you brought it up a bit before, but there's this thing that suddenly dropped on the Rangers, that if there's this special stone, that if Mondo merges the arrowhead with the stone, well, first of all, David gets out, he's captured by Cogs, he's held by one Cog, even though he's apparently as good a fighter as Tommy is.
And does nothing about it, he's just awkwardly standing there as the Cogs hold him.
Yeah, and because apparently everyone in the Oliver family is a martial arts god.
Apparently it's genetics. Maybe their great-grandfather, and I don't know, was like a great champion of whatever.
That sealed people into an arrowhead.
Yeah, there you go.
And then they get away from there, and Tommy reveals to David that he's the Red Zeo Ranger.
Bear in mind, though, that before he does that, David is freaking out.
Yeah.
He's like, my brother, they probably have my brother. We have to go rescue my brother. And Tommy's like, no, your brother's fine. Your brother's fine. He's like, no, you don't understand. Which I thought was a nice bit, because there's a point in one of the episodes where David tells Tommy that they're brothers and whatnot. And he's like, now that I found you, I'm never leaving you again. And so because we don't really know backstory exactly, and Tommy didn't seem to really remember having a brother, it's possible that we know David's older. So maybe it was like Tommy was just young enough to forget where he came from. But David would have been old enough to remember having a brother and loving his brother. And so I thought that was actually a very nice touch in the episode, that he's like, so in a nice touch of acting, he's really worried. And this is, I found out that this is actually Jason David Frank's brother playing his brother character, which I thought was very nice, because it does give that familial chemistry. So I thought that was a nice touch. And then you have the reveal of like, no, let me explain why Tommy's fine. And then he takes off the helmet. He's like, oh, you're a Power Ranger.
Yeah, it's...
And then David isn't stupid and puts two and two together. Like, okay, if he's the Red Ranger, then these color-coded nitwits called his friends are also probably Power Rangers.
Yeah. The only thing I didn't like about that is the whole, I will never leave you again, and then you don't see him for most of the rest of the season. He's just...
That's the drawback, yeah. But I guess they do... Communication, don't they mention him in a later episode?
Are they keeping communication in the same way that Dear John letters happen?
All right, so never mind. We will never see this character again.
I mean,
we don't see him again.
We see him very briefly at the beginning of the Gold Zeo Ranger arc, because he's one.
Oh yeah, because we need a.
He's one of the people they use as the misdirect for that.
Yep.
Going so far as to when the person who does end up becoming the Gold Zeo Ranger is approaching, and you don't see their face, they are dressed a lot like Eric. But the stone thing happens, and in the course of like 30 seconds, we go from, oh no, Mondo has found the place to put the arrowhead in, to, I've put the arrowhead in and the Power Rangers can't stop me. to I can feel the ancient powers leaving me because the Power Rangers have the Arrowhead back in 30 seconds.
That must be a new record for the for foiling a plot.
Yeah, he literally puts the stone in Arrowhead in the stone. Tommy launches the new Zord, shoots the rock, and while they're all recovering, teleports out of the Zord to the rock, takes the Arrowhead, and teleports off again.
I will give them credit for the fact that Tommy effectively used the Zord as a distraction.
Yeah. And artillery.
Yeah, and artillery. But it's kind of a refreshing change of pace because it was always like, oh, don't escalate the fight until the bad guys do. And yeah. Here's Tommy like, nope, we're just going to go straight for the Zord.
Yeah, I'm just going to drop a Zord on him. Like,
it's more effective than a lot of their other plans. But this points to what you and I think this is kind of cementing what we already knew all along as we reviewed our previous episode, is the fact that Mondo's a terrible bad guy.
Yeah.
He's useless. He's incompetent. He could literally, like you said, launch a full-scale invasion and sit back and relax, but he's just doing the same shtick Rita and Zed were doing.
Yep. I mean,
and not even with that much cleverness. Like,
one thing Rita I will and Zed say,
sometimes got creative.
One thing I will say for Mondo, that we see a bit more in this episode and in the next episode, is he gets in the field a bit more than Rita and Zed did. Like, he actually shows up to fights.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, he's here putting the Arrowhead in himself. And in the next episode, he's part of the plan to aid the distraction. You know what I mean? Anyway, but we'll get to that when we talk about Trust in Me. So they make the Ixthon grow. The Zeozord has a really bad time with Silly String. And then the new Zord shows up. They get a piggyback for the second time in this episode. We literally get the Zeo Battle Zord assembly sequence twice in a 20-something minute episode. We talked about Bulk and Skull. And then at the end of the episode, David and Tommy are sitting in the juice bar. And at some point, they're both holding the Arrowhead. Nizzle decides to split in half. Just mystically, magically. It's just like, oh, yeah, I should fall apart now. Even though...
Well, no, because wasn't that the Arrowhead that... the part of the Arrowhead that the Elder gave to Tommy during the Zeo Saga that was then connected to David's half of the Arrowhead? Or is that a different Arrowhead?
We're going to go with it's the same Arrowhead until people on Twitter.
Yeah. I'm going to go with it's the same Arrowhead unless people on Twitter start attacking us when this episode airs.
Yeah.
Which means that the Arrowhead can be split. And so they decide to split it to, I guess, prevent it from
falling into
Mondo's
hands again, because he can't combine two parts of an Arrowhead, surely.
If one half of the Arrowhead is in one place and the other somewhere else, it'll make it harder. I don't know.
Yeah. Even though teleport technology exists. Anyway.
Half the time, there have been episodes where we're just like, you can teleport.
Oh, yeah.
Why aren't you doing it? It's like, they forgot.
All right. So, that concludes... Brother, can you spare me an Arrowhead? I apologize to everybody for us sort of doing that as a bit of a throwaway. I'm sure that Mike and Brian really got into this in the last episode.
But we don't care.
But they decided to give the final episode of Tommy's big arc for the season to the two people in the team who hate Tommy. So we're just gonna stick to our guns.
Besides, it gives a little bit of a break from the Tommy worship, you know, it's a refreshing break.
So, the next episode the next episode of Zeo we are reviewing today is Trust in Me, in which Rocky, the synopsis on Ranger Wiki is Rocky takes an interest in a blind karate student, but she distrusts him and the others. Meanwhile, King Mondo summons the Defector to gain the Rangers and even Alpha 5's trust. Not the most accurate synopsis.
None of that is remotely accurate.
Some of it
parts
is.
Parts of it are.
Some of it is.
Little things, but...
So, the premise of this episode is... It's based around this blind karate practitioner called Penny.
Oh, she did have a name. Okay.
She did. She did. She doesn't get any... The person playing her is not credited at all. No one could tell you who's playing her. She's listed as... ... on the Ranger Wiki, even though she's in like 60% of this episode.
Not even on IMDb. I wonder if she's on the IMDb.
I don't know.
Weird. Okay.
The episode starts with Rocky, Tanya, and Billy showing rocking up to the Angel Grove Community Center saying, I'm really looking forward to this demonstration. Apparently she can defend herself against three men at once. Which Tanya makes some comment about you boys being worried or something. And then they walk into a packed... Sorry.
Before we get to the reveal about her, this part, I thought it was the funniest and dumbest part of this... One of the funniest and dumbest parts of this episode. Because Tanya is really... She's like... She can take on three guys at once. And I'm like, and you literally fight monsters and putties and like things that can kill you.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand why this is impressive. And then she goes, are you both scared, boys? And I'm like, of what? They literally have two very capable fighters on their team who are girls. Like, it's not like they've never seen a girl fight before.
Yeah.
Whoopty freaking do.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so unnecessarily dumb.
They're also, and we'll get to this later, but they're the kind of people that are going to be pro women being able to defend themselves.
Right. Like, so it's not like this is some unheard of thing that she's dragging these like sexist men to. I think it's it's Rocky and Billy that go with her. I'm just like, come on. If there's one thing Billy knows is that any woman could probably kick his butt.
And he's perfectly fine with into that.
Yeah, exactly. And so this was just like, okay, so they get into the fight, right? And they conveniently, like, nobody's taking the seats in the front. And I'm like, okay.
That's what I literally was about to say. They walk into a packed convention center and get front row seats. It's standing room only everywhere else in the youth center. And then there's just these three seats in the front row that they just go and sit in. And I'm
Bernie must have put in like a sign at the bottom that says reserved for the noobs that are here every day.
And I was like, have they ever been to a convention center in a busy convention room? Like in a panel room? Front row was the first seats to go. Anyway,
it's Power Rangers. But what's interesting, so we find out that the fighter is blind, but can I just say they talked up how, oh, she can take three guys at once and she takes three guys one at a time.
Yeah.
And it's not the same thing. And it's not to say she's not a capable fighter, even though the choreography was not the greatest. But I was like, I was expecting something a little bit more exciting than what we got.
Right, so when I said that we were had an issue at an episode that was going to give us some talking points, this is the one I was talking about. So after the demonstration, Rocky, Billy, and Tanya go over to Penny and start talking to her. and she drops some things, and they're like, oh, let us help you with that. And she's like, I don't need your help. Right? Now, as a person who has a disability, right? I want to point out that Penny's being the douchebag here. Because she is assuming that what they are doing is being done because of her disability. Not because they were trying to be nice.
It comes up even in the previous line.
Yeah.
Before she drops her bag, right? Where Billy's like, where did you learn to fight? And she's like, oh, because I'm blind. And I'm like, why would that be the connection? And Billy's taken aback by that. And Rocky's like, no, it's because like you're a cool fighter. We want to know
where you learn martial arts.
Yeah, we just want to learn martial arts. And I think like you can tell Billy was like kind of like surprised by that comment, because that's definitely not how he meant it. And Billy being still slightly awkward, he doesn't know how to respond. And so Rocky's like, we're just curious where you learned. And she's like, oh, from my father. And then she gets up and dumps her bag, is sort of dumped. And I think in her defense, I would say that she's probably a person who has had to deal a lot in her life with people who like want to help her, but don't always have the best intentions or know what they're doing. And
right.
So
I'm not saying that she hasn't, right?
Right. But there's like this, there is like this sort of implied, before she says the line, which is very harsh, I agree. There's like this sort of implication of like, they don't really like awkwardness from like mostly Billy and Rocky, which I think just because the fact that she's a pretty girl who can fight rather than the fact that she's blind, but they're not sure how to like navigate that. I don't know.
Well, I think to go back to this, yes, she's probably had a lot of people who are trying to look down on her because she has a disability, right? However, that is no excuse for assuming everyone is doing that, right? Yeah. Especially when you are on a crusade yourself to be treated like a normal person and like everyone else, you should apply that to others. You should practice what you preach.
Valid. Right?
Now, there are some things I do actually physically need help with, right?
Yeah.
But if I'm walking up to a set of doors, right, that have the little things where I can push them and they'll open automatically for me, and someone wants to open the door, hold the door open for me, I'm not going to yell at them. I'm going to be like, thanks. Right?
Yeah.
Because they took the time out of their day to do something nice. And we know from the previous three seasons, this isn't the Power Rangers looking at her differently because she's blind.
Well, remember we had that episode. We had that episode where Kimberly's friend who was deaf.
Yeah,
I can't remember her name, but she was like, that was a really good episode.
Yeah,
and you know, it gave a lot of attention to the deaf community, and it had her be kind of a central point where she like sees. I think she like in that episode she like saw Lord Zedd on a hike or something. And like ran off and then tells the others and then like has to lead them back or leads Kimberly back to wherever, and then they get captured or something. But it was a really good episode. It was actually surprisingly well written.
Yeah.
So this is like, I had flashbacks to that, and I guess maybe the difference is she doesn't know these people. They're like, it's not, even though they go to the same, like, even though they go to the same high school, she doesn't know them, which I think given how overachieving these children are, it would be ridiculous if anybody at the school doesn't know them, because they're in charge of every like fundraiser, juice club event, sports match, and everything except like, and like, I don't know, charity galas. they do everything in the school because, you know, so it'd be kind of silly if she doesn't know them, even though they don't know her. And I was like, oh, so maybe this is somebody who's like, you know, travels around the country and gives demonstrations and talks about her experiences. And then we see her at the school, literally in the next scene.
Yeah. And they're at the school and they're watching her give the demonstration to the younger kids. All of which look to be way below high school age, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was like a visiting middle schooler situation.
Maybe. And Rocky,
or maybe there's a daycare center at the school, because the way that the city functions never makes any sense. Yeah. We're just gonna go with that. Maybe it's a K through 12.
Yeah, and then Rocky says something about, I wonder why she's so aggressive. And Kat turns around and makes the comment. She seems to imply that Rocky and the others feel sorry for Penny, when that's literally never been shown on the screen. All they've tried to do is be nice to her because they are nice.
Yep.
That would, if they had shown at any point Billy, Rocky, or Tanya thinking less of this woman because she is blind, and her then
you don't even realize she's blind until like after the fight, or there's a line I think somewhere after the fight or something that tells us that. But
you see her picking up the cane and unfolding the cane, and they go,
"That's right,
she's blind." If there had been any form of her dealing with discrimination in this episode at all, not even Balkan Skull, not random passers-by, not Lieutenant Stone, no one discriminates against this woman in any way.
No one even, like, no one makes a comment towards her, no one tries to infantilize her, like...
Yeah. The closest thing you get is when the young kid is like, how do you do stuff?
Yeah.
And that's a fine comment for a young kid, because they don't know.
And she responds appropriately and shows him, then talks to him and like in a way that is like not jerk to children.
Yeah. And she's like, she's like, you got to trust your other senses. Like, you have peanut butter and jelly for lunch because I can smell it on your breath and that kind of thing. Right.
Yeah.
No one at any point is even vaguely discriminatory or thinks less of this woman or goes out of their way to force their help upon her outside of the Rangers going, hey, let us help pick up your stuff.
Yeah.
Because we're nice, not because we're discriminating against you. We want to be your friend, right?
I mean, I guess maybe it can be argued they tried to do like something different with her, in like the sense that like they didn't, like they wanted to give her like a, I don't know, something different to her character. But I don't know, it was kind of weird. But anyway, moving on from like this part of it, I put in here that Rocky has no girl skills.
Rocky has no skills at a lot of things.
Well, we're taking it one episode at a time.
I did want to make a joke here about how in the last season we covered Rocky learning chemistry. But he seems to have forgotten that.
Yeah.
Rocky... insert joke about doors and not being good at them. I don't know. It's just... I don't... What is there to say other than this might be the most awkward I've ever seen Rocky be?
Oh gosh, that's saying a lot. There's been quite a few episodes.
And then there's... the subplot of Balkan Skull being undercover,
which was fantastic.
It was absolutely brilliant. Pointing out once again that Penny smells Balkan Skull from like 10 meters away. And just bear in mind that so far she's detected the breath of a small child having had PB&J and smelt bulk and skull from like 10 meters away. This will come in important later.
Yep, I see where you're going with this already.
Rocky she meets up with Rocky in the park. They start talking. He treats her exactly as he did before, and then she's suddenly like, "Oh, do you want to walk me to the bus stop?" And yep. While they're on their way, they get
a weird buzzing that she hears, and then Rocky's communicator goes off.
Yeah, and then because Mondo's created this monster, and there's this plan to have the monster gain the trust of the Rangers and lure them into a trap.
Yeah, also, I found it funny that his monster's actual name is Defector.
Yeah, because he's made from parts of old robots, and he's pretending to defect.
Right? Yep. But there's like a switch or something that, what's his name, our randomly Scottish cog uses.
Yeah.
To, I guess, make him good versus bad, because there's that moment where he just like rescues a puppy.
Yeah. Yeah. Brief interruption there. Go ahead. Sorry, Sasha.
Yeah, no worries. I don't know. Like the... It gave me some like precursors to Wasp with a Heart a little bit at the beginning, where he's like, oh, he rescues a puppy and he cares. And then of course, like our Scottish in the quarry, when they're staging the whole thing, there's the moment where like our Scottish cog has a name. I'm sorry, what is his name?
Clank.
Sure. The Scottish cog, Clank has this like device and he pulls the switch and it like rechanges them back to bad or something.
Yeah.
That was interesting. But, you know, Rocky's communicator goes off, right? And he's like, sit right here. I'm going to go find the source of the noise. And he steps like maybe 3 feet away from her.
Round the corner.
Right? And turns on his communicator and he's like, go ahead, Zordon. And then he morphs. And I'm like, she just didn't notice any of that.
He even whispers it's morphing time, which I thought was quite funny. Sure.
Okay. We'll believe that. We'll buy that.
Yeah, I don't know. I can have the distance thing. Yeah, I did notice like if she might be able to hear that. That's not really what I was driving towards with the smell stuff. We'll get to that. I quite like and as I said before, when we reviewed Puppet Blaster, right? The concept for this episode is a really interesting one that would have been much more interesting if it had played out over time.
Yeah.
Like if they'd introduced Defector early, not shown that he was part of King Mondo's plan, right?
Yeah.
And then have him turn on the Rangers like 15 to 20 episodes later, then that would have been like a dagger in the back kind of thing, right? Rather than just like have this weird feeling where the Rangers come to trust this dude in this course of like 20 minutes.
Well,
and then like
rescuing a puppy is a big deal.
And then when they're fighting in the quarry, they're acting like he'd been their best friend for a year.
Yeah.
And then when Rocky's using the defender wheel to defeat him, he's talking like Rocky went to bat for this thing, even though
there's like, I can't believe I trust him. I'm like, when did you do that? What did you do?
Yeah, it's weird.
But then again, that's why we get Wasp with a Heart, which is a beautiful episode.
And there's a line in this bit where they're trying to decide if they should trust Defector, where Kat says that robot must know that King Mondo's plans and could give us the advantage we need. And I was just thinking, you're winning. You don't need, like, what? You don't need an advantage. You are winning.
Yeah, it's not like Mondo has some great evil scheme that this is all leading to because he's stolen different particles, you know, different things on Earth to build a big weapon that he's going to blast the world with. It's literally none of that. He's just there.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And then after they meet Defector for the first time, Rocky's talking to the other Rangers while they're morphed. And Penny picks out his voice.
Mm-hmm.
From like 20 feet away.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, Rocky, is that you? And he's like, yeah, I'm here with the Power Rangers. And she's like, oh, if you're looking for the big thing, it went that way. And they're like, you Daredevil or what? Like Matt Murdock showed up?
Yeah, pretty much.
And then the episode plays.
She hears Tanya's voice very clearly, though.
Yeah. And then not only does she hear Tanya's voice very clearly, the episode then plays out exactly as you would expect. The Rangers grow to trust the thing. They flip the switch. They get offended. They kill the monster. And then at the end, Penny sat in the youth center. Rocky's there talking to her, and the rest of the Rangers show up and start talking around her.
Yep.
And she doesn't recognize one of their voices.
Yep.
This being right after Lieutenant Stone has been hitting on Bulk and Skull, who are undercover as women.
But look, I loved it. For the sheer hilarity of the fact that we start off with Lieutenant Stone's entire stick in the episode is trying to find Bulk and Skull.
Yeah.
And Bulk and Skull, like, we have to pass our undercover like merit badge, basically. But first, they're in a hot dog cart, and Bulk is a hot dog vendor, and Skull is apparently a contortionist.
He's in the cart, and like his legs are all bent up, and yeah,
he's in the cart, freaking contortionist. And then they're like statues in the park, and even the little girl was like, "Excuse me, have you seen my puppy?"
And Lieutenant Stone stood like right there.
Yeah, well, at that point he'd walked away further, but it was funny he didn't hear that. And now they're very obviously Bulk. It's like, look, there's a reason why Lieutenant Stone is not actually a cop. He's just like he was the police academy person.
Right, but he's a lieutenant, which means at some point that man has got promoted.
Nepotism.
Yeah, probably.
Bribery.
And then he goes off to run a juice bar.
No, first he becomes a private investigator, then he goes on to run a juice bar.
Right. Right. You're right. Juice bar is until next season. I have a mixed opinion on this episode. It's one of those episodes where Power Rangers is trying to do the moral thing, right? They just don't do it very well in this episode.
Yeah.
Unlike the episode with Kimberly's their friend. It's just not executed well here.
Well, I think part of the problem is that she's not... like, her purpose in this plot is sort of to just be a love interest for Rocky for 2 seconds.
Who is blind?
Who is blind. Yeah. But they don't really do anything with her character beyond being just exposition for the blind community, which is great, but we don't really learn anything else about her.
What would have been really interesting, like, the whole arc she goes on, right, would have been perfectly okay for me if, right before she talks to Rocky, Tanya, and Billy, there are people being douchebags to her because she's blind.
Right? Yeah.
But because we never, ever see anyone be a douchebag to her for being blind, she comes across as kind of the dick bit.
And then it's just like she flips the switch because Rocky had a conversation with her for 2 seconds.
Yeah, which he was trying to do before. She wouldn't let him.
Right. So like what changed between then and now? The adrenaline wore off from the her fight?
I don't know. Anyway, now we move on to what may be my favorite Zio episode. It came from Angel Grove.
This episode was such a delight.
Yeah. It is absolute proof that the Zordon era, with the exception of In Space, maybe, is at its best when it is not taking itself seriously.
Yeah.
All of the best episodes of seasons are when they are not taking themselves too seriously, in my opinion, anyway, because as I've documented, the one that always gets thrown around is the pizza episode in Turbo, and I love that episode. So the premise of this episode is Adam and Tanya are studying late at night at the high school, which implies that high schools are open at 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night.
And they're never locked.
And they're never, ever locked. And they are being patrolled by policemen. And Adam falls asleep while studying and has a dream while watching a monster movie and has a dream which involves a bunch of classic monsters and the Rangers being those monsters. And all in all, it's a really dumb, fun episode with the exception of one thing, which we will get to.
Okay, well.
But it is an Adam-centric episode, which is brilliant. I love
it. Honestly, it's been a little, like, given the episodes that I've already recorded, it is refreshing to see Adam do something.
It is. We are in Zio. Adam has been a thing for 2 seasons at this point, basically. Half of season 2, all of season 3, and half of the Zio season. And this is my first Adam-centric episode.
But, like, as I'm going through these episodes, like, Rocky's getting some attention, sort of. We had some episodes with Tanya because we kind of had to build her up as a character a little bit.
She isn't just Aisha.
Yeah, exactly. But then, like the only other thing I remember seeing Adam do was when he was, like, helping Tanya with her karate skills.
Yeah.
I've missed Adam, and I didn't even know I was missing him.
Yep. So, Adam falls asleep.
Yep.
And which we don't know, by the way.
Oh, we know.
All right.
We know.
All right. It is not. We know he's fallen asleep, but it is not shown that he's fallen asleep. Right. You just see like
it is. There's
no,
like
no, that. No. It's not, it's shown at the end, but like point.
So as I was watching this episode, there's a moment where, so he puts the movie on.
Yeah, and he puts his head down.
And he actually sees his eyes closing, and then we go back to the clock.
Okay.
And then as he's like, then there's like a black cat, and he walks into the hallway. And then
Rita and Zed.
Yep.
It is nice to see some semi-competent villains. In Zio.
Keyword there being semi-competent.
Yep. It's just nice to see Rita and Zed again. Like, I did the Machine Empire are just awful.
Yeah. Just
really bad.
Yeah.
And then the cat's there, and I instantly...
He's a cute kitty.
I instantly thought that that's what they might be doing with Kat's character.
Yeah. Not subtle, is it?
Because of how she's introduced in the Pink Ranger stuff.
Yep.
But then, like, she was white in that. She was a white cat in that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Rita and Zed lay out this plan about this powerful sorcerer, and how Adam has to get these various items to take to the sorcerer to break the spell.
Yep.
And the very first person, and I'm going to let you just go on this, the very first person he comes across is Tom Acula.
Oh my god, that is so cringy, I can't. First of all due respect to Jason David Frank, but please don't do accents. Just for the safety of humanity, do not do accents. I don't, like, okay, it was very odd. I will give them credit because it looks like the entire cast is having so much fun in this episode.
Yeah.
Right, like, they were like, okay, so we're going to do this episode and there's going to be no morphing and no Power Ranger shenanigans except for Reed and Zed and then, like, you know, King Mondo. And they're like, what? So they lay out this episode and everybody's like, oh man, I can't wait. And you can tell that Jason David Frank is just having fun with this.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So basically, Adam has to, like, get various items from various characters and then eventually present them to the wizard to help defeat King Mondo. And the first thing he needs is a vampire's cloak. And so there's this, like, moment where he's like, Tommy, and he's like, no, I am Tim Macula. I can't take that seriously. But then there's like a moment where he, like, fights somebody and then he needs to get the cloak. And so he's just like, look, garlic. And then he takes the cloak and runs away.
He grabs it and runs. Yeah.
But
first he's like, look, Lord Mondo. And Tommy's like, I'm not falling for that one. And then he's like, garlic. He's like, ah.
Yep. It was just fun. And what's really impressive is the entire episode after Adam walks out of the school, quote unquote, is in black and white. Because they make a joke. Yeah. Adam was like, why is everything in black and white now?
Did someone turn the color off?
Pretty much. And it really helps the tone of the episode.
Yeah.
So then after Tommy, we meet Rocky, who is like, totes not a werewolf, guys. Like, totally not the werewolf. Which is really funny. And then he hears...
And Tommy... And Rocky playing an English lord. It was just like, oh my god.
I really like the costumes. They were great.
Yeah.
So then he hears that he's told about this professor guy by Totes, not Lieutenant Stone. And he's like, oh, that must be Billy. And so he goes, and it's not Billy. We get to our mummy episode, which is Balkan Skull.
Yes, I loved that reveal.
I loved that. Just, again, the actors do have talent and abilities that I wish could have been explored further with good writing, because their acting skills do really, like, shine in this episode. Right? Like, Skull being this archaeologist dude, right? And Bulk being the mummy was really funny. And then, of course, they're like, oh, wait, this isn't the professor. You have to go to the real professor, the doctor. Right. And so we go, I'm like, oh, this is Billy. This is Frankenstein. And Alpha as Igor.
Igor. And it's a pun because he lifts up a patch. And he's got like four eyes that's pasted to his. And he's got, and Richard Horvitz has the Alpha voice, but he gives it the little bit of, oh, yes, master.
It was so funny. And not gonna lie though, David Yost looks a little done here, which, like, totally understandable. Yeah. But he's like, but it sort of makes sense because Dr. Frankenstein also is kind of a cold character. If we go by Mary Shelley and not Mel Brooks.
I mean, yes. Professor Hackensack, I believe his name is.
Yes. Because the movie's called The Bride of Hackensack or something.
Yeah.
And then Tanya is revealed to be Frankenstein's monster.
In the best overacting ever.
Yeah.
She's just screaming.
Yep. But the facial expressions.
Yeah.
It's gold. It is beautiful.
Did you mention, by the way, that in the mummy part, they revealed that the mummy was called Balkan Hotep?
Oh, I forgot about that. Yes, that is very important, and I apologize.
Yeah, I love that name.
It's a good name. It's so funny. Like, this episode is just sort of like the levity and silliness we needed in a so far rather season.
Yeah. One thing I did quite like, which I'm sure was absolutely unintentional. Absolutely unintentional. I am convinced there is no way this was planned. Some of the angles that are being used when they're looking down on Dr. Von Hackensack animating the bride are very similar to the angles used when Tommy is being turned into the White Ranger.
You're right.
And I'm convinced it's not intentional.
There's no way it was intentional. But that is an interesting touch. And then finally, so Adam finally gets all of his things together and he goes to see the wizard, which is obviously Zordon.
Before we get there, right? Every other ranger has had like this a long, elaborate scene.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
And then Kat shows up dressed as a witch, gets her necklace stolen, and is done in like 20 seconds.
And then she melts. Yep.
And then she melts.
Well, because, you know, you got to get to the wizard. Time's running out.
Like, yeah, but they really did Kat dirty. I really wanted to see.
Fine. She led him around the entire situation. She had a character, but as a cat.
Yeah. But I wanted to see more of her overacting as the witch.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because I think while we have been very... what is the phrase? Let's say derogatory about Miss Hillard's acting. I think she would do a brilliant job of overacting as the witch.
I agree.
And I wanted to see more of that. I wanted to see her throwing spells and talking about Eye of Newt and Tongue of Dog and...
I'll get you, my pretties!
Yeah, I want to see a lot of... I wanted to see that.
Fair. Very fair.
But we didn't get that. We just got, I'm going to steal her necklace and get out of here.
Yeah, which pretty much.
It was quite funny that she turned in from a cat and got a coin stolen from her. Rather than her stealing the coin. And then we get, he's in front of
the wizard.
The wizard, aka Zordonicus.
Aka a jerk in any universe.
Yes. And he is told that he has to pick one of his friends to fight Drillmaster in an absolutely shoehorned piece of Sentai footage.
Yep.
I genuinely thought we might go a whole episode without Sentai footage, but screw me, I guess. And this is the part I hate. When asked who to pick, Adam says to himself, "What would Tommy do?"
Yeah, I don't understand. I guess that line was in there for just so that Zordon or Mondo or whatever could like, oh, you said Tommy's name. Okay, Tommy's going.
So we can use the Red Ranger footage. Yeah.
Right. But you're right. It's weird that Adam would say that when Adam has had to make difficult choices as a ranger. He's not a noob.
He's also better at it than Tommy.
That is fact. We're sorry, guys. This is now officially the Adam Park Show. Thank you for joining us.
And it will be until Overdrive. And they just really force the Sentai footage in there, and then there's the reveal that Zordonicus is actually Mondo and Adam's been helping him take over the Earth, and everyone seems doomed, and then he wakes up.
Yep.
Having slept at a high school overnight. His parents not losing their gosh darn minds when he doesn't come home, not calling the police. Not a single teacher has spotted him when they came to open the school.
I'm sorry, what are parents?
Yeah.
What's a like there's only been like there was one episode that I was watching that is in between these ones and previous ones, and like Mr. Kaplan shows up and I'm like, oh, Mr. Kaplan, he's still alive.
I remember him.
It's
How's
been a
the toupee?
Minute. Oh my god, that toupee is just it's laughable. But anyway, this episode is simultaneously like a typical "it happened in a dream" situation with some really heavy Wizard of Oz vibes, and it really works.
Yeah, I love this episode. I'm critical about the Tommy thing, but it is just there so they could shoehorn in the Sentai footage. It is there. I make fun of the fact that the high school is open overnight and no one spots Adam there, but I don't care because it's just a nice, fun episode.
There is a cute bit at the beginning of the episode that we didn't talk about, so basically Tanya is studying with Adam and Tanya's like, I'm sorry, Adam, I'm done.
Yes.
And then she gets up and Bulk and Skull are there and they're like falling asleep. And he's like, wait, they're like, wait, you're leaving? And she's like, yeah, I'm tired. I'm going to go home. It's like, but it's dark out and it's a full moon. And she's like, I'll walk you home, guys.
And Skull's like, oh, thank you. Puts his head on her shoulder. Like they're making out like they're trying to protect her. And she's just like, don't worry, boys, I'll walk you home. And he's like, oh, thank you so much.
So cute. I really like that.
Yeah. But it's another inconsistency in Bulk and Skull.
Yeah. Well, there's been a lot of those this season.
To this point, the Rangers have been like, we had the conclusion of Mighty Morphin and the Alien Rangers, and we discussed this when we were doing Puppet Blaster, I think.
Whatever episodes we recorded previously, yes.
That there was like a regression in the relationship between the Rangers and Bulk and Skull.
Yeah.
And now they seem to be back to being friends.
It seems like there's a lot of back and forth. And it's sort of like Bulk and Skull or whatever the plot needs to be for that episode for the sake of the Rangers. But there is an episode later that Mike and I are doing together where Kat and Tanya actually help Bulk and Skull.
Yeah.
So I don't know what changed or didn't change. I don't know. Maybe Bulk and Skull are like, oh, Tommy's girlfriend broke up with them. Maybe you should be nice to the Rangers again because Kimberly was our friend, but that was still a jerk move to send him a Dear John letter.
Right, but I don't think it's happened at this point, is it?
Hasn't it? Isn't this after, or is this before? This is the problem with recording episodes out of order. No, this is after No Business Like Snow Business.
Right, yeah. Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, but the stuff before wasn't.
Yes, that part's not, which is why I'm saying that the transition of like that the transition happens somewhere between Puppet Blaster and where we are now.
Okay. I don't know. It bothers me that they can't keep their relationship consistent.
But also like Bulk and Skull aren't really consistent at all this season.
That's my point. Is as characters, Bulk and Skull, I don't think it's too critical to say I think that Bulk and Skull feel a little bit like afterthoughts this season.
Yeah.
They're just kind of added in because they either need to pad episodes or they're like, oh, we need a joke here and it wouldn't fit for the Rangers to do it. You know?
Yeah. That's fair. Them quitting the police force.
We'll get to that when we get to it.
Yeah.
But I think we need, if there's one thing our listeners have come to expect from, at the very least, you and I, is a focus to be put on Bulk and Skull. Because as we've gone on record as saying, they're the most interesting characters in the entire show, at least until the end of the Zordon era. And even then, a little bit beyond that. I'm looking at you, Lost Galaxy. But yeah, that's kind of our episode for today. Thank you for listening, everyone.
And please go watch It Came From
Please go and watch Grove. It Came From Angel Grove. It's such a good episode. You can kind of ignore the other two episodes, honestly. That being said, Sasha, where can people find you on this tangled web of the internet?
Crying in a corner. No, just kidding. That's just only about my thesis. You can find me on Twitter at Geeky Kaplan. That is Kaplan with a K after the greatest superhero in the Marvel Universe, Billy Kaplan. And over on Tumblr, I am the only VFTG person you can actually have a conversation with on Tumblr. And that is geekgirl101.tumblr.com. I am literally always there for better or worse. Ben, what about you?
You can find me on the Twitter machines at Bob T. Goldfish. You can find me doing video game streams over at twitch.tv /321_TV. And you can find me on the Voices from the Grid sister show, Awesome Mania, where Mike and I sit down once a month with a friend of ours. We watch through a wrestling pay-per-view from currently, as of the time of recording, the year 1997. And we riff along with it, and it's designed to be like watched along with the pay-per-view, kind of like a riff tracks kind of thing. And don't forget that you can find out more about Voices from the Grid itself over on Twitter at twitter.com/VFTG_PR.
Tweet at us. Tell us your thoughts on the episodes. We'd like to ignore you. No, I'm kidding.
Of the four of us, Sasha and I are probably the most active on the Twitter.
Am I really on there?
Compared to the other two, yes.
Oh, geez. All right. I got to step up my game then.
So that being said, let's wrap up this episode. And we will say, in the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. And party on, you non-gender-specific honorifics.
And may the power protect you.
Peace.